Hello, and welcome to the Logistics Management Podcast Series. My name is Jeff Berman. I'm Group News Editor for Logistics Management, as well as the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group. Today, it's a real pleasure to welcome Barbara Melvin to our podcast. Barbara serves as Chief Operating Officer for the South Carolina Ports Authority. In her role there as COO, Barbara oversees terminal operations, carrier sales, information technology and support services, intermodal, inland ports, crane and equipment maintenance, engineering, environmental, port police, procurement, the logistics service center, and cruise operations. Barbara also serves as the South Carolina Port Authority's lead staff person on the Charleston Harbor Post 45 project. And on July 1st of this year, Barbara will become president and CEO of South Carolina Ports. She'll be the sixth leader in the history of the port, as well as the first woman to lead a top 10 U.S. operating container port. During her 20-plus years with the South Carolina Port Authority, Barbara has held several leadership positions, including Senior Vice President, Operations and Terminals, Senior Vice President, External Affairs, and Vice President, Government Relations. Prior to joining the port in 1998, she served as Director of Government Relations for the Charleston Metro Chamber of Commerce and as a policy analyst for the Georgia Governor's Office of Planning and Budget. Barbara holds a bachelor's degree in political science from Georgia Southern University with a minor in international relations, as well as an MBA in global supply chain from the University of Tennessee Haslam School of Business. Barbara, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you, Jeff. Thanks for having me. This is an exciting time to be in the supply chain.
Oh, you're not kidding. There is so much going on, to say the least. So, Barbara, I thought we could kind of just kick things off with sort of a state of the port, if you will. And let's look at it from a market perspective first, and then we'll transfer over to South Carolina ports. How do we sort of view the current state of the container shipping sector? I'm sure we could fill our whole time with just that topic alone.
I would say so. I would say currently you could describe the container shipping sector as strained. I mean, we are certainly full of additional import cargo coming into the United States. And what is kind of downstream of the arrival of that import cargo was heightened by the pandemic. But certainly the underlying factors were already in existence that allowed us to realize how rigid our supply chain truly is. It is not a rubber band. It is a chain.
Yeah, I absolutely. And on a more closer to home level, as it relates to South Carolina Port Authority, how would you assess how things are going on a year-to-date basis? I know that January really started well on strong footing with a record month.
We have really, Jeff, been experiencing record months now for a year. Not unlike all of the other top 10 ports, are seeing additional import volume, really a decline in export volume. And so that is leading to challenges on our terminals, at times vessel queues, and they tend to move around depending on which port has experienced them last. But here in Charleston, you know, we are growing. We had started to tack into the retail market from being a port that really grew on the backs of advanced manufacturing. And that success came at the same time that the kind of influx of imports into the country came. So we're getting it somewhat double, but we had built infrastructure and prepared ourselves for this. I don't think anybody could have prepared for the type of growth that we've seen into the United States, which is about 20% of additional import volumes. But, you know, we are prepared. We will work our way through this. We will keep the service levels at the highest that we can for our customers and return as quickly as possible to the productivity that our ocean carriers and our importers and exporters expect from us.
Okay, terrific. And you had just touched upon infrastructure. You guys are definitely, as CEO Jim Newsom recently observed in your January press release for volumes, that South Carolina Ports has invested strategically in port infrastructure and are planning to deploy creative solutions to ensure fluidity for your customers. I know that you just had a, an announcement earlier about the smart chassis pull efforts going on over there. And I'm sure that's one thing you could touch on, but I'd really like to hear about any and all other port infrastructure related things you guys have cooking.
Under Jim Newsom's leadership, I would say that we took an extremely comprehensive approach to building up a capital plan that would keep us growing in the top 10 container ports in the United States. And so what does that include? It includes some things that would be normally expected for a port, like modernizing our existing facilities. We actually opened in April of last year the first greenfield container terminal that opened in the United States since 2009. We have constructed two inland ports, which has allowed for some relief during this influx of import cargo into the U.S. We will complete within the next couple of months a harbor deepening project that takes our harbor to 52 feet at mean low water. And then, as you said, kind of not necessarily seen as a normal capital investment by a port, but we have jumped into the chassis business.
Yes.
We have emulated what Virginia did with HRCP, and we have invested $200 million to put more than 11,000 brand new chassis into our market by March of next year.
Oh, that's exciting. Yeah, I remember you had mentioned that at the SMC3 conference back in January at the panel we were on. And I remember thinking that was pretty exciting news, to be sure. So I wanted to just cite a Wall Street Journal article back in last month on February 18th, Barbara, that just noticed it observed that a backup of container ships waiting for berths at South Carolina's Port of Charleston has reached 30 vessels from 19 last month, January being the last month in this case, as a supply chain congestion that has frustrated U.S. importers extends to more gateways. So I just was curious sort of how things are going on that front. Since then, it's only been a few weeks, really, as it relates to relieving congestion and what steps are being taken.
So I think because of the good infrastructure planning that we had in place going into this issue, we didn't really see any of the backup that other ports were experiencing until after the Thanksgiving holidays. And then with the holidays and some weather, things just built up very quickly. So from a high of a vessel queue of more than 30, we are back down to 25. I think you will see us continue to steadily knock that vessel queue down so that our customers are not having to wait to bring their cargo in or have it shipped out. You know, the exporters suffer too. We talk a lot about the importers, but the exporters are suffering too as vessels wait in a queue. So you will see us continue to make progress on that. We are doing that by extending our gate hours, continuing to be able to move cargo off the terminal so that the fluid operations can continue of unloading the vessels to put the import cargo down on the terminal. So it's a lot of cooperation that's necessary to make sure that we can keep our terminals fluid. And that really is what will help erase this vessel queue is terminal fluidity.
Okay, great, great. That's really exciting. I kind of wanted to just circle back to sort of, the pandemic. Obviously, things are getting better now. It appears to be with case numbers on the decline and things like that. But when we look at the pandemic from the eyes of the under the guise rather of the supply chain. Do you think that maybe perhaps a pandemic, did it really cause all the disruption in the supply chain that we saw and we're seeing, or did it simply accelerate the issues that were already occurring in your opinion?
So I think the issues that we have been talking about in the supply chain now for probably decades were really just, the fire was lit brighter by the pandemic. So, we weren't adjusting as fast as we needed to in the way that consumers were buying their goods. E-commerce really demanded more warehouse space, fulfillment center space. So if you listen to Prologix, we're 300 million square feet short of distribution center space in this country. The pandemic did not cause that. That is something that has been brewing for a while. We've been talking for more than two decades now about the need to attract more motor carriers, drivers into our industry. The pandemic just highlighted that. We've talked, I know I've been on at least four chassis panels in my short career in operations. So that means they've been talking about the lack of chassis in our industry for at least 10 years. So again, the pandemic didn't cause that. All it did was just put a bright spotlight on the things that we let sit and fester and not solve. And so the time now is for solutions, not to continue to talk about the problems.
Yeah, absolutely. And then as it relates to velocity, port throughput, velocity, things along those lines, what do you think are sort of the contributing factors to that overall slowdown in velocity that's been occurring?
Well, I think too, if you look downstream of the ports, you know, if imports have nowhere to go in a warehouse, the container becomes that warehouse. And the container yard becomes that warehouse if there's not a chassis available for it to move out to an inland location on. So it's really a lot of this is indicative of the fact that we need more port-related infrastructure in this country. So our inland ports have given us some bit of a reprieve with regards to that. But if we don't have a way to get goods further inland into the country and not utilize marine terminal space as the parking spaces for these mobile warehouses, then we're really going to continue to suffer. Because if we can't create space to put boxes down from a ship, then, you know, we can't work ships. So then they just sit in the vessel queue. You're really stopping it at its first point of origin if you can't get it off the ship.
Yeah, you've been seeing a lot from all kinds of ports about those beefing up inland port operations, a lot about pop-up container yards, things like that. As far as the latter goes, I'm just curious, do you think the pop-up container yards, for example, might be something that we'll see more of? And if so, are they sort of here to stay, or at least until we work through the current situation?
It depends on how you define pop-up container yards. So in our market, you know, we have such scarce truck capacity. Mm-hmm. I think we have to weigh moving the box further away from us with scarce truck capacity when we really need to take that box exactly where it needs to go one time, not move it four times. You know, is that really solving the problem, or is that putting a Band-Aid on it? Okay. I think there are more structural solutions than just pop-up yards. And that is really investing in infrastructure in the interior of the country that can set up inland ports around exporters to utilize and reutilize the import boxes. We need to better utilize rail to help us move cargo to the interior. And, you know, frankly, we need the rail yards to ground so that we're not utilizing and tying up chassis at the rail facilities. And I think they want to do that. You know, it's the last thing that rail yards want to deal with, sure, are chassis on their facilities. So, you know, this really shows you how interlocked the whole supply chain is, and any one action can cause a reaction. So say, for example, a port shrinks their export receiving window. We realize when we do that ties up the chassis underneath that export container even longer. So that takes it out of use for other things. So we have to balance every action, realizing that there is going to be what you hope is a positive reaction, but it could very well be a negative reaction.
Yeah, no question about it. In the supply chain challenges, it's been an ongoing theme and narrative, understandably so. How about structural solutions to these supply chain challenges? What do you think they should look like, or how can they work and evolve?
So I think that shippers have to realize that 60% of the import volume into the United States can't move into three gateways. So I think the diversification of their networks is one structural solution, particularly given that 70% of retail consumers are now east of the Mississippi. There is the transit time issue that the West Coast gives an advantage over. But then again, if you're sitting offshore, does that transit time really get eaten away? That advantage gets eaten away by the fact that you can't work all of those ships going into the West Coast ports. So diversifying their import gateways is one thing that you can do. And certainly you would expect me to say that South Carolina has invested well to allow us to be that fourth gateway for the country. Mm-hmm. I think we've got to make the conditions better for motor carriers. We have to, as ports, take this very seriously and make sure that this becomes a profession that people are proud to be a part of again. and we have to make sure they have ample facilities, and we have to make sure our port terminals work so that they don't spend a lot of time here, because if they're sitting here, they're not making money. We have to get more apprentices into these programs so that we can catch young people at an early age instead of losing them until they're 26 years old, to allow them to see if driving is something that they want to do. We have to encourage investment in more chassis purchases. You know, we're solving for South Carolina, but there are many other states out there that need those same types of solutions. And then just in general, infrastructure investments in port-related infrastructure, whether that be more inland ports, additional cargo terminals, marine terminals, et cetera. So there is a comprehensive approach that must be undertaken so that we're not caught off guard by this type of situation again.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Those are great points. And then just simply, because we keep sort of pushing the goalpost back, if you will. When do you think we may see an end to sort of the supply chain crunch, this import crunch, in terms of maybe seeing some sort of light at the end of the tunnel, getting back to a more normal narrative or momentum?
I think it's pretty simple, Jeff. It's when you and I stop buying stuff. we've got to at some point say, okay, our house looks great now on Zoom, so I've gotten everything that I need. That's not a great thing for ports, for people to stop buying import goods. But really, the math is simple. U.S. port market can handle about 2 million TEUs of imports a month. And we have consistently during the pandemic and now coming out of it, been at 2.5 million TEUs of import goods per month, or even greater than that, particularly January, February. So, you know, there has to be a lessening of consumer demand for goods and the return of consumer demand for services, so that we diversify, you know, the amount of money, the discretionary spending that we have, and return that market to about 35% of GDP being for service spending and about 35% being for goods spending.
Yeah, yeah, a more balanced ratio. And then just to wrap up, Barbara, how would you sort of define or characterize the essence of a major port?
You know, it's pretty simple. I would like to make this sexier than it is, but, you know, we load and unload ships and we load and unload trucks. I mean, it is our job to provide the necessary infrastructure to make that happen in a fluid way, in a way that does not impact other parts of the supply chain. So we have to deliver that infrastructure, which is always expensive, in the right time to which it's needed. It's never a field of dreams with regards to port infrastructure. You know, we have to be a player in economic development, not only for our states, but for our regions, because this is the type of investment, capital investment, that either foreign direct investment makes or for our retailers as they make them, so that this industry continues to create the good paying jobs that it does. I know here in our state, we have studied the fact that our industry pays about 35% higher than other industries in South Carolina. So this is a job to be proud of, and ports are the generators of those jobs. And they're typically generational jobs. So we have to take very seriously not only our missions to move cargo and freight, but also to create these really well-paying jobs.
Yeah, no, well said. Look, Barbara, this brings us to the end of our allotted time for today's podcast recording. So on behalf of Logistics Management Magazine and also the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group, I'd like to offer up a big thank you for spending some time with us today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having us on, Jeff.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those of you on Twitter, please go ahead and give the South Carolina Ports Authority a quick follow. That's simply at SC Ports. And also, please go ahead and give Barbara a follow, and that's at Barbara L. Melvin. And don't forget to follow Logistics Management if you're not already. That's simply at Logistics MGMT. And also, please feel free to go ahead and sign up for our podcast wherever you get your podcast. Just look for Supply Chain 24/7 and hit the subscribe button. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time.